Oh, snaps.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Good morning, everybody. I am Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. Hey, we do have a new learning center up and running. We are still migrating over our old website with our new website, but if you land on our site and you go to the delivery or you go to the fax or anything like that, it's going to bump you over to our new site. We have a great learning center where you can find all sorts of information on beginners, on health issues, on our podcast, and our experts, like my expert, Dr. Judy Jasek, who joins me this morning. How are you this morning, Dr. Jasek?
Doing well. Just keep on fighting the good fight, you know?
Well, you're fighting the fight all across the globe because, as I understand, now you got people from Australia reaching out to you. I mean, look at the impact you're having, not only on just the United States, but places outside of the United States. Isn't that amazing?
It is. And it's, you know, it's not just me. They're finding this podcast and they're finding it, as many, many people do, just very educational. And that, you know, draws them in and they want to ask more questions. And that's, you know, what I love to do is to help educate people.
Well, if you love to educate people, you're going to love this information that we're going to talk about today. We are going to talk about puppies, okay, and hip dysplasia and some of the better ways and case studies to raise puppies. But I want to call something to our listeners' attention. Now, this is a site that I found, Dr. Jasek, and it's called protectthepets.com. protectthepets.com. Now, this site was created by veterinarian Dr. John Robb. He, back in October of 2019, was facing the loss of his veterinary license, and legal action was being taken against him for using half doses of the rabies vaccine on his clients. Now, Dr. Robb was a Banfield pet hospital franchise owner, had a thriving practice in Connecticut. But as an avid believer that vaccines carry a risk of adverse reactions, Dr. Robb delivered half doses to his clients, advocating vaccinating every 3 years. Okay. And he was also involved in helping pass the rabies exemption law in Connecticut. But here's what happened. When Banfield Hospital corporate found out that he was doing half doses of his vaccine protocol, Banfield sent letters to over 5,000 of his clients telling them their pets had not been properly vaccinated and they should be brought back to Banfield for boosters.
Oh, gosh.
Then they officially took back the ownership of Dr. Robb's practice, claiming he was not practicing veterinary medicine up to their standards. They revaccinated, Dr. Jasek, nearly 1,500 animals. And Banfield Hospital, right, the CEO sends out this letter. It says, we are going to do the right thing by our pets and our clients each and every time. So we're going to double dose. We're going to give your dogs more than they need. But when Dr. Robb heard of this situation that Banfield wanted to revaccinate all of these animals, he showed up at the clinic and he urged the pet owners to run a titer before revaccinating. And here's what happened. Banfield had him arrested for trespassing. and banned from entering his former clinic and the Pet Smart store. So he created this website, and it's called protectthepets.com. What he has on here that I love is the science, and he will show you what doses you should be giving your dog based on what size they are. Now, here's what's interesting. Dr. Dodds says that vaccinations are up to the discretion of the veterinarian, and the veterinarian is not required to follow the label direction as long as you have informed consent and discuss it with the owner. But I think because he owned a franchise of Banfield, this is what happened. But this is very scary to me, very frightening to me. But I have to applaud Dr. Rob for educating pet parents. And go to his site. Again, it's called protectthepets.com. He has videos. He has the science. He has a place where you can report adverse reactions. He talks about titers. He gives a dosage chart, Dr. Jasek, which I think is quite interesting here. And he shows how many pounds the dogs are and then what the dosage is. And then he starts recording the adverse events in these vaccines. So it's a very enlightening site. But what is your take on that?
You know, so first of all, I am a big believer in informed consent. And I think that does not happen enough in the profession, where people should be 100% informed about what their pet is being given and what the potential side effects are. Now, I think there, you know, could be some implications if, you know, like the state board, you know, found out, oh, I'm only giving, you know, not giving a full, I think rabies is the only one that, because of the regulatory thing, that like if the state board found out about it, that there could be some implications. But this is really interesting on his site. I'm going to have to go through this, because I just pulled it up because I hadn't heard about it before today. As far as, is there actual evidence that, you know, that we need to be giving these bigger dosages? Because in my mind, like, okay, you have the standard 1 cc dose, you know, there's probably a good chance that you could give just a small portion of that, and it's going to stimulate immunity even in bigger dogs. Like, how do we know that that's the amount required? Like, is anybody even looking at that? And it looks like maybe this guy has, because he has some charts and stuff on there. So, you know, I'm gonna have to go through that. And I think I have an advantage because I do have a small practice. So I don't have, I mean, it's like, wow, for, you know, that is two such opposite ends of the spectrum, this guy, and then he was working for Banfield. That's like, you know, totally, totally different viewpoints, because I can see where the corporations would not be in favor of that. You know, for me, I do feel that, you know, what I do in my practice, it's a discussion between me and my clients, and what they agree to and what we agree is best for their pets. And I'm fortunate that I don't have anybody, you know, else looking over my shoulder.
Right. Well, what's interesting is there is nobody signed up in Colorado. If you go to, there's a section here about the veterinarian. So it's PTP vets, protect the pets vets, that are going to be minimal vaccinations. Especially dosing, you can see who's there. A lot of these people write for Dogs Naturally. I recognize their names. But as I look in Colorado, they don't have anybody. So you could be the first.
I am going to check it out. I'm very curious about his website. So I'm going to I'm going to dig into it. Because, you know, I think this is the type of thing that we need to be doing, getting, you know, getting the word out. And, you know, you got to kind of raise a stink a little bit, you know, to get
jailed.
To get some of this information out there, you know, it's the whole, you know, there's, you know, no such thing as bad publicity. You know, if this is what this guy is all about, well, just the fact that he went through all this with, you know, with Banfield, you know, it gets his name out there and it shows that, you know, he's willing to stand up for what he believes is safe for the pets. You know, it's another one of these cases, you know, we've talked about this, Dee Dee. You know, this wasn't an easy road for this guy, you know, been way easier for him to keep his, you know, nice, you know, corporate income and just play the game. But he said, no, this is not right. And this is not good for the pets, and took a stand. Now, you know, he couldn't keep his practice because he had, you know, he's working for Banfield, but now he's reinventing what he's doing. And I think this is what we're all going to be needing to do going forward, is taking a look at what things need to change to improve the health of our pets, and making a stand and doing things differently. I think there's going to be an evolution in medicine, both in human and in veterinary medicine, and the conventional ways, I think people are just going to wake up to the fact that this just doesn't make any sense, and it's not good for the pets. And I think a lot of people are, you know, like my clients come in to see me, they're like, yeah, all these vaccines and all these medications, you know, like, I don't see how this can possibly be good for my pet. But they, because that's mainstream, they don't always know where else to go. So movements like this, and I am going to, you know, dig into this and maybe even contact him. And, you know, because I think the more we can get together and create a more of a movement around this and a label, like you have a clinics that are, you know, it's just like they did this, like the no fear clinics, where clinics can be, you know, certified to be, I mean, this was before pre-COVID, but where there would be certain things they would do to create less fear and anxiety in pets coming in to the clinic, and they'd be certified. So why can't we have some sort of certification that says, you know, we do informed consent and we don't over vaccinate, and, you know, we have some sort of sanction that people can go in and say, are you one of these clinics? And so people know exactly what to say. Are you one of these, you know, protect the pet clinics or whatever? And if they're not, then people are like, okay, see ya. And then that's going to put, I think that'll, you know, put a little pressure on the clinics to think about doing something differently. Mm.
You are a very positive thinker. Because I'm just like, I mean, come on, Dr. Jasek. I mean, you hear from your, and I think it's a great idea, but there are so many vets that are just closed-minded. You and I were talking before the podcast about when people take their pets in and say, hey, I'm working with the homeopath, I'm going down the holistic approach, and their dog is sick. You've mentioned that they've said, well, we're not going to work with your dog at all. What the heck is that?
Yeah, I know. And this has gotten so much worse with COVID, because like I was saying, you know, the vets don't even meet with the people directly. So they don't even have to say that to them face to face. They can just say, nope, don't want to deal with those pets, you know, don't want to deal with those raw feeders, you know, those crazy people that feed raw because, you know, their pet has cancer and they're feeding raw. They're going to, you know, kill it doing that. But I do think that if people had, you know, more known options, we can get the word out that there's a different option out there. I think the pet parents are going to be on board with it. The veterinary profession, yeah, absolutely. They're so closed-minded that, you know, you're not going to re-educate conventional veterinarians. But if we can provide another option, it's like that whole thing about, who was it? I think Buckminster Fuller said that, you know, you can't make a difference by, you know, changing the status quo. You have to create a different option. And I think that's what we need to do. We just need to create a different option and get it out there that this is available. And then people will start, you know, coming coming over, you know, to our way of thinking, because they know it's right. They feel it. They know. I mean, I've had so many people come in and say, I just knew I shouldn't have given my pet that vaccine. It didn't feel right, but that's what the vet was recommending. And now, you know, then a couple months later, we have a cancer diagnosis. You know, I hear that kind of stuff all the time. And I think the time is right to be, you know, providing different options for people.
Absolutely. Now, one thing that I get all the time are people contacting me and they're saying, I don't know what to believe. There's so much information out there. Who should I believe? And I always say, well, you probably want to talk to people that have been doing it for a long time. Somebody that has been on both sides of the fence, somebody that has a wide advantage, you know, able to see things from a big advantage point, right? So you've done both things. You have been on both sides. You've seen and you've treated dogs that have been on a kibble diet, over-vaccinated, given all the toxic stuff, and you've dealt with a lot of raw feeders, and you feed raw yourself. So this is what I say to people. But there's another issue that I want to talk about today, and this is, what should people believe about feeding puppies? Okay, because I get this call a lot, where I'll ask, they're talking about going over to a raw diet, and I'll say, well, what are you feeding? And they say, well, I'm feeding Honest Kitchen, and I'm feeding, you know, raw, or I'm feeding raw and I'm feeding kibble. And I say, why are you doing that? You know, why are you feeding your puppy a substandard food? And again, we've talked about this before, but they believe that this puppy should be getting all this synthetic vitamin and minerals. And I was struck by this because I was reading in Dr. Billinghurst's book, and he was saying, and he came up with that question, what should puppy parents believe? And he said, well, the answer to that is very simple. You need to look and observe at what happens in nature, what happens in families and kennels all over the world, in canine nutrition. So understanding what puppies eat in the wild, okay, that will tell you what you should be feeding your domestic pups of today, because he says your puppy has the insides of a wild dog or a wolf. Okay. The reason I started researching this is because, and we'll come back to this in a second, but I had a call from a pet parent whose young dog, 18 months, Dr. JC, had hip dysplasia at 18 months. Now I start looking at that saying, what is going on with hip dysplasia? And I think there's a couple of things. One, I looked at this article from Dana Scott on Dogs Naturally, and she was talking about that studies have shown that neutering early, okay, so neutering before 12 months of age has a dramatic impact on dogs with hip dysplasia that get hip dysplasia. Have you heard this? Have you had any research that would substantiate that, Dr. Jasek?
Oh yeah, I've heard that's actually been proven, that, and what they have found is that the growth plates stay open longer when they're spayed and neutered early. So there's like a programmed, you know, so there's, you know, I mean, with hip dysplasia, I mean, there is definitely a genetic component. So if this young dog that has hip dysplasia had parents with hip dysplasia, it's going to be predisposed to it. But they have actually proven that, you know, there's a sort of a genetically programmed time in the body for when the growth plates close. So what that means is in the bones, there's areas in each bone where the cells are dividing, and that's where the bone grows from. And it's usually at each end. And when they get to a certain age and they're done with their skeletal growth, those growth plates close and become stable. So this is why we don't recommend over exercising young puppies, because you can actually damage those growth plates if you work them too hard before their bones are done developing. And so what they have found with the early spay and neuter is that the growth plates actually close earlier when they are left intact. So this is why I always recommend waiting until the dog is done with its skeletal growth. So more like around a year, giant breed dogs, maybe even 18 months. Female dogs should go through at least one heat cycle, because then we know they're reaching, you know, that sexual maturity. And this, these hormones are all interrelated, and the whole endocrine system is all interrelated. And you know, if you think about that and you just look at dogs, you know, I look at dogs all the time. Even the neighborhood dogs, I'm always scrutinizing, you know, how they look. But you see these dogs that have exceptionally long legs, like they look really long and leggy, like, wow, the dog looks like it's walking on stilts. Those are the dogs that probably were spayed and neutered early. And if you think about it, so we're changing the development of the bone. To me, it's a no-brainer that that could also lead to joint malformations, which is what hip dysplasia is. It's a malformation of the hip joint. The joint is not formed correctly. So if you're doing something that's going to change, you know, normal growth plate closure, you're literally altering the normal growth of the puppy. And of course that could predispose that puppy to hip dysplasia, especially, you know, if there is an underlying genetic tendency towards it.
Yeah, which absolutely lines up with Dr. Billinghurst was saying. He was saying that, you know, he was comparing two different pet parents. With one, and this is coming out of the book, but he said one family that adopted a large breed, that we're talking about Rottweilers, had lots of money, and they were going to, you know, they had vets on call. They were going to absolutely make sure that every single meal was totally balanced. They were going to exercise that dog and make it the strongest that it could be. And then there was another family who didn't have a whole lot of money, who, you know, did a lot of table scraps, who let the dog just, you know, eat things outside like bugs and grass. And they didn't have time to walk it all the time, but it went outside and played like a normal puppy, and it played until it got tired, and then it went to sleep. And he said, and what the outcome was that the family who was the helicopter parents, who was doing everything, we had to watch every little thing, had all these calcium supplements, didn't want to have their dogs eating raw meaty bones because they were worried, you know, worried that it was going to rip their insides. That dog ended up having to be put down at 3 years old because of this major hip dysplasia problems, versus a family who wasn't a helicopter parent, who didn't always overfeed the dog, who let the dog go outside and play, who didn't over-vaccinate. That dog grew up to be very, very healthy. And we see that a lot. I see that a lot. I know you must hear that a lot, where people get really, really, they want to be very precise. They want to put everything in their dog's body. They want to know exactly what's in every little thing. And they overfeed the dogs. And these dogs grow up and they have hip dysplasia. And I thought about that when I got this call from this pet parent with an 18-month-old that had hip dysplasia. Now, like you said, there are probably some DNA issues, things that are happening. But this is the mindset that we kind of got to get away from, that everything has to be exact. And what he was talking about in this scenario, and wolf dogs, Dr. Jason, he was like, look, they spend their days eating raw meaty bones. They have to forage. They have to work for their food. They are not overfed. They are lean. Some days they don't eat at all. And so we see a lot of our pet parents that are like, oh my gosh, my puppy didn't eat breakfast this morning. That's fine. It's okay. It's okay. But isn't that interesting, Dr. Jasek, this way that we have seen all of these diseases come about because we are just trying to make these dogs, wolf dogs, wild animals that we have domesticated, but we are trying to make them perfect. And if we would just look at how they're raised in the wild, we might do a better job.
And you know, also look at how were dogs raised before we had kibble and all these, you know, supplements. You know, kibble has only been around since, you know, around World War II times. So we're talking 80 years. It hasn't been around all that long. Well, the dogs have been around. What the heck were they eating? You know, they were, you know, and I've had clients that, you know, are like the older generations of farmers and ranchers. And they're like, they come in and they don't know anything about holistic medicine. But they're like I've gone, you know, decades without vaccinating dogs. And they ran around on the farm and we threw out our leftovers. You know, they might, you know, butcher a steer or a pig. And guess where all the intestines and all the organs and all the stuff that the people weren't going to eat got thrown outside, and the dogs had a little feast on it. You know, that's what dogs ate. They actually ate, you know, people's leftovers. That's what dogs lived on for hundreds of years, literally, before the invention of kibble and all this, you know, human intervention that says, oh, we need to micromanage these nutrients. And so we pump them full of a bunch of synthetics. And I think that throws their bodies further out of balance. And especially if you're giving things like calcium supplements to puppies, which I am adamantly against. People ask me, what should I supplement my puppy with? Be like, raw bones or bone broth, you know, what nature intended them to eat, because that's the balanced form. And you start adding in supplements, human beings, you know, we like to think we're really smart, but really we're not. It's Mother Nature knows, you know, what to do. If you feed your dog based on how Mother Nature would feed them, you know, that is the best balanced diet. And feeding, you know, ground bone in the blends, or, you know, letting them eat some, you know, like chicken necks or turkey necks or the feet. And if you have puppies, you can cut them into smaller pieces. You know, I have little dogs. I just cut stuff up into smaller pieces so that they can eat it. But when we get in and start micromanaging these nutrients, I think there is such a huge risk of, you know, throwing things way, way out of balance, because these nutrients have to be taken in together. And if you're feeding bone, you're feeding the perfectly balanced mineral supplement. And if you feed something like, you know, you add in like the, you know, the chicken or duck feet, where you're getting all that extra collagen and all those tendons and everything in there, you're feeding all of the building blocks for healthy bones and joints. I don't ever recommend joint supplements. All the glucosamine supplements, if I tell people, you have to feed your dog anyway, you know, like add in some chicken feet or duck feet, you know, or backs or necks, that type of stuff. That's what you need to be feeding them for healthy bones and joints, not the supplement. And the supplements are expensive. And people say, I can't afford raw. Like, how much are you spending every month on supplements? I've started asking that question, and usually we can sort through that. And a lot of people have another $100 a month to spend on the food, because they stop giving the supplements that oftentimes aren't doing any good anyway. Because I'll ask that question, okay, so your pet's on these 6 supplements, are they helping? And a lot of times people don't know. They just gave them because it sounds like a good idea. Like, well, if you don't think they're helping, then let's eliminate them and let's put those resources towards, you know, formulating a better balanced raw diet. And the pets are much, much healthier for doing that.
Yeah. By the way, we now have bison cartilage. And I'm going to tell you, that has sold out like crazy. Number one, it's flat. It's flat and wide. Okay. So dogs can get it in their back teeth. It's not something that they're going to, you guys got to remember, dogs don't have hinged jaws. So people always say to me, well, my dog doesn't chew. Well, that's good, because it would be an anomaly. No dogs chew. I mean, they're going to rip, shred, and tear with their front teeth, and they're going to put anything that they need to crack in those back teeth. But this bison cartilage is amazing. It's consumable. I know Tess, that works for you. I had talked to her one time. She was like, dogs need to be eating all sorts of stuff. They need to be eating cartilage, and they need to be eating duck heads and duck feet and turkey necks and all that kind of stuff. And that's exactly what Billinghurst is saying in this book. He's saying two things that pet parents, you need to hear. Dogs need to be hungry. Dogs need to be hungry. Isn't that funny? So he's saying, look, puppies, don't overfeed them. Let them be hungry. Okay. Let's don't have fat, roly-poly puppies. Let them be hungry. We don't want to see ribs or hip bones. And number two, they need to learn to eat a variety of things. So they need to learn to eat. I have a lot of people, Dr. Jason, they'll call me and say, well, my dog just won't touch this fish. Won't touch this fish. Well, work with them, right? Work with them. It may take a little bit of time. So maybe they don't understand what it is. Warm it up. Put it in their food. Let it thaw out. Let it sit out on the patio. You know, work with them. Don't just give up at the first sign that they don't want to eat. But the other thing he's talking about in here is he's like, let them eat a variety of things. Wild dogs eat poop. They eat grass. They eat all sorts of stuff out in the back. So that is very, very important. Take a look at duck heads, duck feet, turkey necks, all of that kind of stuff. I do want to ask you one question, though, Dr. JC. When we're talking about hip dysplasia, is this an inflammation? Is there inflammation in the dog? And I say this because, okay, if somebody says, well, my dog has hip dysplasia, so we have this joint pain. Now, we don't want to create inflammation on top of joint pain. And yet, Billinghurst in here is talking about, and we talk about giving some of the softer type bones, like the turkey, like the chicken. I'm a little bit torn here. If we have a dog with hip dysplasia, but they're puppies, and we want to give them a soft bone, but yet chicken is high in omega-6s, where do we go with that? Because that is inflammatory to some degree.
Right. Well, I think that's just where we have to balance the rotation. You want to get the benefit, but then you don't want to be, overdoing any negative. So everything is going to have, pros and cons. Chicken might be a little higher in omega-6s, but this cartilage and, the benefits of the bone is huge. So you feed some chicken bone, but you're not feeding it, as a majority of the diet. You're giving them a little bit every day, but then let's add in something that's higher in omega-3s, like the fish. I don't recommend fish oils. I think we've probably touched on that in the past because they're not very stable. But see if you can get your dog to eat some whole fish. And if they don't want to eat like the whole fish, the feedback I tend to get from clients on the fish, the raw frozen fish, is dogs either love it or hate it. For the dogs that love it, okay, it's easy. You can feed them, that whole fish, and then that can balance out maybe the higher omega-6 in the chicken, but then you're also rotating other proteins. You're adding in beef and grass-fed beef, non-factory formed beef is not high in omega-6s. If you're feeding factory farmed meat, so any kind of grocery store meat, which, I do have people sometimes want to add in, that is going to be much, much more inflammatory. So you definitely want to look at sourcing. And I think the same is true with something like chicken too. If it's factory farmed, and those birds are really stressed and really pushed for growth, then they are definitely going to be more inflammatory. So you want to, by doing that rotation so that you get the benefit of all these different things. But at the same time, if there's any, negatives or any, precautions from a certain, type of food, then you're minimizing the adverse effects as well.
Gotcha. You know, when I look at this, so Dr. Billinghurst gives these 10 secrets of successful puppy rearing. The ninth one is this, what you just talked about. He said, the attempt to make each meal balanced and complete is a major problem inherent in all modern processed foods. And he says, the reason that the mom who was not trying to do everything exactly right for her parents was so successful, for her pets was so successful, was because she was not trying to give her puppy everything it needed in a nutritional sense and every single meal. She raised this puppy in a common sense way, the same way she raised her kids, because I'm sure she didn't try to, you know, look at every single ingredient in every single thing that she fed her kids at every single meal. And we see that. We right. see that.
Well, people don't eat that way, you know? I mean, who sits down and, you know, measures the nutrients in every meal? And these quote-unquote complete diets, you know, I know we've touched on this before too. They look great on paper because you have all these nutrients and all these levels and they meet all these standards, but that doesn't mean that they're benefiting the pet at all. And I completely agree. I tell people to look at, when it comes to balancing, like, what are you feeding your pet in a week's time frame? You know, have they had several different proteins? Are you feeding some fish a few times a week, adding in some extra tripe? I don't think it's good for the pets to be feeding everything every day. You rotate it through, and it gives the body, I think, more of a chance to benefit from the nutrients, because it's so easy to overload the body with, you know, over nutrition. I love what he said about letting the puppy get hungry, because I talk to people about that all the time. When they say their dog is not eating, I say, well, just skip a meal and they'll be hungry. And I bet they'll eat better. Because I think what people tend to do, well, they don't eat breakfast. Oh, they must not like it. They think, well, they don't like the food. So I'm going to offer them this and I'm going to offer them that. And people are home now, so they'll do this all day. The dog's just sitting there waiting to see what the next thing is that they're going to offer them. Pull the food up. You know, if they don't eat, give them a few minutes to eat. If they don't eat, pull the food up, and then the next time you feed them, you know, they're going to be hungry, and they're going to be more likely to eat. Now, if there's GI symptoms like vomiting or diarrhea and the pet's actually acting sick, that's different. But I think a lot of pets are overfed, and people get so obsessed with, oh my God, they can't miss a meal. Let them miss a meal. It's fine. Maybe that's just exactly what their body needs. And their body's telling them, like, yeah, it's not the best thing for me right now to eat this meal. I'm going to skip it. And then by the next meal, they're feeling great and they have a real healthy appetite.
Yeah. And I listen, dogs were born and created to eat bones. I think that people, they're so afraid of bones. You guys, raw bones are different. Raw bones are different than cooked bones. We certainly don't advocate raw hides. And for some reason, pet parents look at raw hides as safer than raw bones. Not true. Not true. That we've done the podcast before where we've talked about how deadly raw hides are. But raw meaty bones are so beneficial. And one thing that people, I'll get pictures, Dr. Jacek. I get pictures. People say, I found this bone in this blend. And I say, yes. And well, it's going to scrape the insides of my dog. Do we advocate supervising when your dogs eat bones? Sure. It's great for mental stimulation. The mineral supply, the real calcium that's in bone, the joint supplementation that's in real bone, it's just awesome for them. So this morning, my two Germans got a duck head. They got some of the blend. They got an egg. And I took them outside and they're just like, boom. I mean, my youngest one, she probably did take, you know, two chomps on the head and swallowed it whole, probably, because it was gone in a matter of seconds. But those duck heads are so malleable. They're so soft.
I wanted to, comment on a couple things in that. First of all, on the bone, I think where bone, this whole fear factor with bone came in is cooked bone is dangerous. So the whole thing, you know, dog gets into the garbage and eats the cooked, leftover cooked chicken bones. Those bones are very brittle and they can splinter. I mean, I have done surgery on dogs to take those out of the stomach because those can do damage. It isn't the same as raw, like you were saying. So there's a big difference between feeding cooked bone and feeding raw bone. And the other thing that I have been digging into with people that come back, because I get the same feedback. Oh, my dog, you know, vomited up a piece of bone. The bone is bad for the dog. The bone is not bad for the dog. The issue is that the dog's digestive system is out of whack, and it's been hammered by too many medications. I recently listened to a little video about the dangers of antacids in people. This is on the human side, but I have every reason to believe that this is applicable to pets as well. So these are your pepsids. And I see these used so often in pets. So a pet has some digestive issues and they're commonly put on pepsid. You know, it's an antacid. So this decreases the acid production in the stomach and maybe helps with some symptoms, but they need that acid to properly digest their food. And if a pet has been on repeated courses of any medication, antibiotics, pain medications, whatever, and especially these antacids, then the normal acid production in their stomach is likely impaired. And you have to restore that. So the issue is not that the bone is a problem, it's that we have to work on tuning up that dog's digestive tract, because there's absolutely no reason why they shouldn't be able to digest the bone. I mean, you just said, Didi, your dog ate a whole duck head and this little thumbnail piece of bone in their stomach is causing a problem. Like, no. The issue is that their digestive systems are so messed up from all the chronic medications, and especially if they've been on kibble diets prior, or they're on lots of supplements. You know, I question, with these dogs that are on so many different supplements, is anything in those supplements actually neutralizing the acid? You know, some of these supplements have 20 or 30 ingredients in them. What is that doing to the acid content in the stomach and impairing digestion? And that's like the first step. So when the bone is not broken down properly, then it might sit in the stomach. And then we have other issues like, you know, motility. You know, the stuff sits in the stomach too long and then the dog vomits. But it's not because the bone's a problem. It's really because the digestion is impaired. They don't have the acid content to break it down. And then there could be impaired motility. So it's not moving out of the stomach as quickly as it should. And it's, you know, it's sitting in there. So I think, you know, people need to remember to look at those types of things. It's the food always gets blamed. It's not the food that's making the dog sick. It's the dog has impaired digestion. And that's where we need to be looking. And what can we do to improve the dog's digestion? Because, and I said this before, I have a 14-year-old, 5-pound Chihuahua that's missing most of her teeth, and she eats these same blends. I don't ever see a problem. So tell me why a, you know, Labrador or German Shepherd is going to have trouble digesting this bone. It just doesn't make any sense.
No, and I think that you have to look at, like you said, what else is going in the diet. And I always find something else. I had someone send me an email, and they said, well, the same person I think that sent the pictures of the bone. And she said, well, my dog's reverse sneezing, and this is the bone is causing this. And I said, well, reverse sneezing, you know, is a common symptom of of rabies vaccinosis. It can be other things as well. It could be collapsed trachea from, you know, things going around the throat. It can be all types of things. But I don't see bone being an issue for reverse sneezing. Do you, Dr. Jasek?
No, not at all. Two completely unrelated things. But I will tell you that if you're feeding, you know, any amount of kibble or treats, you know, I always question about treats because sometimes people will stop feeding kibble, but then they're still giving the milk bones or the Beggin strips or, you know, these not so good treats. Those will cause inflammation anywhere in the body, and including the reverse sneezing, or like you said, vaccinosis from any of the vaccines. It can cause inflammation in the, you know, in the nasal passageway. But for the bone to be causing that, like, I'm not sure what the connection is there. Like, do they think that the bone pieces are getting up there in the nose or somehow? I mean, I have to chuckle a bit because I'm not sure how that association is even being made.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of associations that get made and a lot of associations that don't get made. For instance, someone called me, they only do duck. And I said, well, why are we only doing duck, right? Well, because everything else causes my dog to have loose stools. And I said, well, and they're doing the PMRs, which is a higher bone count. Mm-hmm. I said, well, let's think about that for a second. And I started really drilling down, and here's what I found. That the dog is getting Estella and Chewy's freeze-dried plus a probiotic. I said, well, she said, well, the freeze-dried is totally organic, is totally, you know, natural. So I said, please let me send you a ingredients list of this. And the ingredients list was at least 40 ingredients long. Jeez. So I said, I would pull out the Stella and Chewy's. I would pull out the probiotic for now. And feed your dog these other blends, right? And let's see. Because I don't, well, she was saying that she felt like her dog was allergic to all of these other things because they were having these poop problems. And I said that I don't really think that's the case. So let's just experiment. So it's very apparent to me that there's still some fear that the raw diet does not have everything a dog needs in people's minds. So they throw in these other things that sound good. But when you look at these other products, and sometimes they're not easy to find on the website, or the ingredient list, all of these things, they're synthetics. All of these different supplements that they're putting in there are synthetics. And if you took a look at even the freeze-dried stuff, Dr. Jasek, oh my God, the synthetics are a mile long.
I know. And that's, to me, that's a big tip off. You know, you mentioned can't find ingredients. So I look up ingredients all the time. And even if it's products that I have looked up previously, because it's always changing. And, you know, and the client tells me what they're feeding or what they're using as a supplement, I'm always looking it up. And that is my biggest pet peeve, is where you go on the website and you see all the marketing, like all natural, you know, contains, you know, these things. But just because it says it contains certain things doesn't mean that there's not a whole bunch of other stuff in there too. And to find an actual accurate ingredient list on, I would even say, the majority of products out there, it's really hard to do. And it's really aggravating. And to me, that's a big red flag, because if it's a good product, like, Dee Dee, I don't have to look very far to find the ingredients in one of your blends. Like, right there, go to order it. I pull up your site all the time for clients. Like, say, look, this is what's in it. You know, 6 or 8 different things. You know, what's in it is right there. And when you have to dig and search, and people look at the marketing claims, and this is all intentional. These marketing claims make it sound really good, but when you drill down and find out what is actually in there, you're going to find a whole different story.
Well, and the thing about it is, what we represent is real food. There are no additives or synthetics or anything mm-hmm. in the food. And then the question is, well, why does your label say, you know, for supplemental feeding only? There's an entire explanation in our learning center that you as a pet parent want to understand. And that's primarily because we don't put all of that other stuff in there that is required by the AAFCO food. Why? Because it's already dead and you've got to add all this stuff back right. into it. So we're talking about two completely, completely different products there. The last question I want to ask you is this. 8-year-old Roddy all of a sudden is starting to have these, I think she said it's been going on for the last year, where they eat and then they're going to regurgitate their food. And she said, the only thing that really helps is Pepcid. I said, oh, I think we're in a catch 22 here. And I'm going to send you the information that Dr. Jasek has sent me on Pepcid. But as I drilled down further, I said, what else? You know, it takes a while for people to really maybe think about what else. And she said, well, I do these veggie fruit smoothies for my dogs every day. I said, what's in it? Bananas and apples and berries and all of that stuff. That's a lot of sugar. I said, well, it may be worth a look and maybe worth a trial to totally pull that smoothie out of the diet, right? Totally pull that smoothie, that fruit veggie smoothie out of the diet. And let's see if that doesn't change this regurgitation thing that's going on. Would that be your advice as well?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't mean that adding in some fruits or veggies are necessarily bad. But first of all, there's individual variation on what agrees with dogs and what doesn't agree with dogs. So, But that's what I always do, is that I get down to basics, like let's find out. And then maybe we add those ingredients back in one at a time. You know, you could add in a little kale or a little blueberry or whatever she's putting in the smoothies. And, you know, the other thing about smoothies is a lot of times people will add in processed supplements, say, you know, your protein supplements and, you know, different things. So I would be very specific about what is going in that smoothie. And then again, you know, has this dog been medicated? You know, is it, you know, what's its vaccine history? Is it getting heartworm prevention or flea and tick? You know, there's a bunch of oral flea and tick preventatives out there now. So I always ask that question, because you're putting a pesticide in the dog's gut. What are you doing to the microbiome? You know, you're going to be really messing up that dog's gut if you're giving those kind of medications. And sometimes people just don't even mention it because they feel like, well, that's just a routine preventative and, you know, that they're completely benign. So I also ask, what else might this dog be getting? But yeah, I absolutely do that. I just get down to basics. And then you see, you know, see where you're at. We get a new baseline and then we start building from there. And then we can start to reintroduce stuff or introduce these ingredients and then see what the dog may or may not be reacting to.
So her biggest fear, Dr. Jasek, was, and I said, listen, Pepcid is really, really not what you want to be giving your dogs. And she's a great pet parent and really wants to do the right thing. And she said, I know, but I can't afford for my dogs to get throat cancer from continually regurgitating acid up through the esophagus. So I said, well, we have to find a better solution than the Pepcid.
And you know, in people, they've actually found this, you know, definitively to be true. So people with GERD, the gastroesophageal, you know, reflux or heartburn, they've actually found that many times it's due to not enough acid, not due to too much. So the common thing is that you give a antacid and that neutralizes the acid. So if any of it does come, any of those gastric juices do come back up into the esophagus, because the esophagus is more sensitive than the stomach lining, then it's less irritating. But the actual issue is there's not enough acid to properly digest the food. So the food is sitting in the stomach too long. And so sometimes if you actually supplement with some digestive enzymes, and even you can even get just a hydrochloric acid supplement to help them digest their food better, that then the reflux is actually less likely. So that's a, it seems counterintuitive, but the issue again is that the stomach is not producing enough acid to digest the food properly. It's sitting in there too long, coming back up into the esophagus, which is more sensitive, and you need to reverse that and again, get the digestive system doing what it's supposed to be doing. And then some of these issues can clear up.
So you would recommend a digestive enzyme, okay, or
hydrochloric acid. And I would probably suggest doing that under medical supervision if you're going to be doing that. I mean, it's a common supplement. I actually take it sometimes when I'm eating a big, heavy meal. I've got some HCO capsules that I'll take. But something really simple that's much more benign that people could try if their dogs are these kind of irpy dogs, or I hear this a lot, people, their dogs are burpy and they're, you know, they might spit up a little bit after a meal. Add in some apple cider vinegar, because that will have a similar effect. Mm. But it's really benign. You're not going to hurt anything by adding in a little apple cider vinegar. And I have seen that really help some of these cases. And if it helps, then that means you're on the right track. And that means that the dog needs more help digesting its food. And then, you know, you could move into more, stronger enzymatic supplements. But I'd probably do that under medical supervision.
I'd probably just send them over to you like I always do. And like I would tell our listeners to go over to Dr. Jasek's website. That's AHA Vet, Apple, Harry, Apple Vet.com, where you can, you have an intake form there. You can send all of your information. And here's what I would do, folks. I would get all my information together in advance and I would get it over to Dr. Jasek, because as I said at the top of the hour, her services are being required all throughout the country and out of the United States even. I'm going to find that list, Dr. Jasek. Somebody sent it to me about where our podcast lands all over the country. It was like, okay, in Poland, your number this and that, your number. So it was good. So that's some good news for today, that we are getting information out there. We're hopefully directing you to some great sites along with Dr. Jasek's, but Protect the Pet, that's a great site for you. Here at Raw Dog Food and Company, just remember this, your pet's health is our business. And here at Raw Dog Food and Company, friends, don't let friends feed kibble. And we have a darn good reason for that. All right, everybody, we will see you next week right here on the Raw Dog Food Truth. Bye, Dr. Jasek.
Bye-bye.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.